You're listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, where you get valuable information you just can't find anywhere else. To thrive in today's trying times, you need the Financial Survival Network, now more than ever. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and get your free newsletter and gift. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Carrie Lutz. It's 5/4/21. And if you've been watching what happened in Alabama with Amazon's successfully fending off a challenge to unionize a warehouse facility there, in fact, overwhelmingly, the employees there voted 70% to 30 not to unionize. And what was behind that? Look, Amazon has a really bad reputation in how they treat their employees, how they fight their workmen's comp claims, even when they know they're bona fide. Amazon, not the favorite company of free market thinkers, of libertarians, and of people who believe that management and their workers are a team, and you have to watch out for your team. You have to take care of them, but that's for someone else to decide, perhaps. But Mark Mix is with us. And if you're not familiar with Mark, Mark, you are the president of the National Right to Work Committee, and you are also a president of the National Right to Work Legal Defense Foundation. So who knows better about labor management relations than you? Welcome to the show. So did Amazon just dodge a bullet? Were the workers really rational and just decided it wasn't worth, maybe it's not the best job in the world, but we don't want to kill the goose that's laying the copper eggs, or perhaps the bronze eggs, right?
Well, Carrie, that's a good question, but what we do know is the results of the election. And frankly, there were 5,800 eligible voters in that election, and 783 voted for unionization. So that's basically 12.7% of the entire workforce that voted for unionization. Obviously, the votes that were actually cast, I think roughly 3,800 were total cast. Some people did not vote. But the bottom line is this: those workers down there made a decision. It was a secret ballot mail-in election, and so no one knew how they voted. And after the fact, you know, while many folks think that Amazon is very deserving of the types of things that unions might do to them in the long run, and what they've done to other industries historically, this one, the workers made decisions. And it's kind of interesting, Carrie, because the anecdotes after the election, they talked to several workers who were been at the Amazon facility in Bessemer, Alabama for a long time, and they said, look, we're being taken care of. I mean, we're working hard, obviously, but it's a job and we're making a good hourly rate. We're getting benefits. And so they didn't see a need to place a third party in between them and the management at that facility. Now, does that mean that all the Amazon facilities across the country have the same type of responses from their workers? We don't know. But what we do know is that the workers exercised their rights to say yes or no to union representation. And overwhelmingly, what was basically an 85% black workforce said, no, we don't want the union. And, you know, the union has filed complaints against that. There'll be an argument, today, in 3 days. There'll be an argument in front of a regional director of the National Labor Relations Board down there to go over charges that the union has made against Amazon for, quote unquote, unfair labor practice charges. But it's pretty interesting. The election was overwhelming, and one can only imagine that it would be very difficult to make an outcome like that without having just absolute overt abuse. And remember, Carrie, this is a campaign that was international. I mean, you had international leaders from countries in Italy and England talking about Amazon and urging the workers to vote for unionization. You had the president of the United States, Joe Biden, make a video talking about how these workers should be unionized at Amazon. You had politicians talking about this was a seminal election for workers, and there's no question this was going to be the comeuppance for Amazon. And frankly, at the end of the day, 12.7% of the workforce voted to have a union come in and speak for them. So the results are pretty overwhelming. And for right now, no matter what you say about it, you kind of trust the employees that use the secret ballot, albeit a mail-in election that lasted over 2 months. They said no. And unfortunately, maybe the NLRB will overturn that and they will certify the union based on some behavior that they uncover from Amazon. But it would be a real injustice to the workers there who have voted and said no to unionization.
Yeah, I happen to think, Mark, as a recovering attorney, this decision is pretty much bulletproof. If it were closer, they could say, well, you know, they were like talking to them about the election and doing all these nefarious things that companies are not supposed to do. And therefore, at the very least, we've got to redo this election. But here, it's just so overwhelming or underwhelming on the part of the union. If you had to take a guess, what do you think was the overriding factor, the overarching factor to the Amazon employees?
Well, you know, I have to take them at their word, at least the ones that were quoted in several news outlets and media outlets right after the election, that they said that they thought they were being treated okay. And, you know, there were former union organizers that were working there that said, look, this is not as bad as people want you to believe it is. And the campaign around it, as I mentioned, this international campaign that included a video of the president of the United States urging them to unionize, apparently was, like most things, Gary, in the media, it was not really accurate as it relates to the employees in that workplace. And, you know, labor and employment law is interesting, and you're right. I mean, at some point when the employer does things that are illegal, which the law is pretty straightforward about things they can do and things they can't do in a union certification election, obviously, you know, the NLRB rules that when employees want to decertify and they want to get rid of a union, the unions can do all kinds of things that the employer could never do during a certification election, but that's, you know, neither here nor there in this case. But I think ultimately those workers were glad to have jobs. They thought that the pay was good, the benefits were good. And I guess if there's stories of abuse down there, they weren't as prevalent as what the union thought they would be to win an election that they thought would change the entire culture of, you know, kind of Amazon and certainly the future of unionizing facilities across the country going forward.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. And what do you draw as far as we've seen this serious, profound decline in unionization across the country? Do you think there's a lesson here in this for us?
Well, I think there is, Kerry, and the important lesson is, and this is, you know, kind of basic stuff, but employers realize, to your point in the introduction, you made the point that employers and workers should consider themselves a team when it comes to an employer investing his or her money into a project and helping those employees that help him or her make a profit to put food on the table for their children. It's a team. And any employer worth his salt or her salt knows that if you don't take care of your employees, someone else will, whether it be a union or the company down the street that decides to take care of people better and can make widgets a little faster or a little better than you can. And certainly, you know, the story of the automotive industry is ripe with that. Henry Ford back in, you know, the 19 teens, when Ford Motor Company had developed the kind of the assembly line manufacturing, they couldn't keep workers. He had over 300% turnover. And so what did Henry Ford do? He raised wages. He paid people $5 a day and said, look, you get your regular $2.70 plus you get $2.30 in bonuses if you just show up to work and don't abuse your family. If you show up to work. And so his turnover dropped over. Buick couldn't compete. GM couldn't compete. And Henry Ford created the 8-hour work shift and the 3 shifts a day and gave workers a day off on the weekends. And what he realized was if he takes care of his employees and makes it possible for them to buy his product, things are going to work. And while union officials take credit for all of that stuff, history says that basically employers, to your point, Kerry, if you take care of your employees, they will take care of you. If you don't, they will unionize and they will have a third party come in, and then you will have a confrontational battle between this entity that allegedly represents all your workers and you. And it doesn't make for a good workplace. We've seen that historically. And I think that's one of the reasons why the rate of unionization has decreased. The number of union members is not down as much as the percentage because we've created new opportunities and new jobs in America and new opportunities for workers. So your point is well taken right at the beginning. Take care of the employees and they'll take care of you.
Couldn't agree with you more. So what's going on now in Congress that everybody seems to be bent out of shape about? They're trying to reverse, I think it was 29 states or 26 states had right-to-work laws in one form or another. And in one fell swoop of the pen, they want to reverse all that?
Don't just survive. Thrive. The Financial Survival Network.
Osino Resources is a Ross Beatty-backed gold exploration company in mining-friendly Namibia. Osino's district-scale land package is situated near two producing gold mines, one of which Osino's management team previously developed and sold to B2 Gold. Osino's founders and management are experienced mining professionals who have already successfully developed and sold two companies in the past 7 years. Osino has an excellent shareholder base with Ross Beatty owning 20%, insiders 5%, and resource capital funds 8%. This is an exploration company with drills turning that you'll definitely want to pay attention to. Osino trades in New York under the ticker OSIIF and in Toronto under the ticker OSI. To learn more, go to osinoresources.com. That's osinoresources.com.
This is the Financial Survival Network, the information you need to thrive now more than ever.
Yeah, that's right. There's 27, Kerry, the right-to-work laws. We passed 5 new laws in the last 9 years, including Indiana and Michigan and Wisconsin and Kentucky and West Virginia. They've all passed right-to-work laws. And yes, there is a bill that's already passed the House with no committee hearings and no testimony that would repeal all 27 right-to-work laws and throw those 27 states back under the federal shadow that was imposed on the country back in 1935, upheld by the Supreme Court in 1937, that basically creates the doctrine of compulsion or forced unionism under federal law. So these states that have passed right-to-work laws, they do that as a privilege granted to them by the United States government, by the federal government, saying, yeah, well, you know, we support the closed shop, the forced union shop, but if you can, by affirmative vote, outlaw it and allow workers to choose whether or not to financially support a labor union, you can do that. And that passed in 1947 as part of the Taft-Hartley Act. And since then, 27 states have passed right-to-work laws, and they've been all been upheld. We haven't lost one once we've had one, but yet Congress, by simply passing this PRO Act, which is now included in the quote rules and instructions in the so-called infrastructure bill, that what $2.5 trillion federal program, the PRO Act is included there, where the president has said he wants Congress to repeal the right to work laws and give unions dramatic new powers over workers as part of the infrastructure bill. And so, Kerry, we're getting dangerously close to a topic that I know you love, and that is literally trillions and trillions of federal dollars flowing into the marketplace and using that money to get radical agendas like forced unionism across the country again. And it's not going to end well for the country, I don't think.
Yeah, and it's not going to end well for those employees either, right?
Yeah, that's right. That's for sure.
I mean, when you consider what benefits they get when they join a union versus the costs, in this day and age, aside from government employees, which is a whole nother animal, whether it should exist or not, FDR, the champion of unionization, was always against unionizing public employees, as was JFK, hero of the left, right?
Well, Franklin Roosevelt was asked that question back when they were passing this dramatic federal expansion of power over the private sector workforce, and he was asked about the public sector, and he said, it's unthinkable. We wouldn't unionize government because it's not the same. And that confrontational adversarial relationship that's created by bargaining in the private sector cannot be applied to the public sector. But yet, Kerry, today, in 2021, there are more government union members in America than there are private sector union members in the country.
I mean, it's a dramatic shift.
It's ridiculous. You know, if you believe that the idea of unionization is to protect workers from abuse in the workplace, then the most abusive employer in the United States of America is, guess who? Government.
Yeah. Actually, the unions, numerous times they've tried to unionize union workers. I know that's a little play on words there. And the unions have fought it wholeheartedly. So it's good for thee, but not for me.
Indeed, indeed. And a little kind of man bites dog story the other day out of New York. The New York Times denied a 600-member unit, a card check unionization. They said that the workers should be able to vote. And, you know, the New York Times opinions about unions are, let's see, everybody should be in a union except for our employees. And so you get to understand kind of the reality behind all this, you know. And frankly, the New York Times, whether they get a union or not, is up to those workers who are going to get a chance to vote using the federal regulations and laws that are in place to allow unions and to allow unions to have workers vote whether or not they want their representation. There's nothing in the law that stops workers from joining unions at all. There's nothing in the law that stops a worker from giving his entire paycheck to a union if he chooses to do so. And I'm sure every single union official in the country would be glad to accept someone who would come to them and say, I want to join your organization. They would be glad to do that, even if they couldn't represent other workers in the bargaining unit. But that's not the case. And union officials have abused their forced unionism privilege for decades, and it comes home to roost. I mean, literally, Samuel Gompers, the father of the American labor movement, warned the AFL delegates in his final speech in El Paso, Texas in 1924. He said, the workers of America adhere to voluntary institutions. Anything else is a menace to their rights. And what Gompers had heard was that several members of delegates were thinking about going to Washington and getting power over the railroad industry, which they did in 1926 with the Railway Labor Act. And he warned them that if you go to government for your power, you're going to become relying on government. And boy, oh boy, has that happened in spades for organized labor. That's why they have to spend literally $2 billion every 2 years on politics, just at the federal level, to protect the privileges that they guard just unbelievably to keep in place, because they can't convince workers to join them voluntarily. They have to have compulsion. And this PRO Act that Joe Biden's talking about is just more compulsion.
Right. So let's talk about, like, in Wisconsin, where they basically opened it up, said you can join a union if you want to, but you're not under any compulsion to join it if you don't. What happened to those unions in Wisconsin?
Yeah, that's an interesting story. That was Scott Walker's so-called Act 10 bill that actually passed in Wisconsin and was signed by him. And what it did is it radically reformed the bargaining system for government employees in the state of Wisconsin. Interestingly enough, Kerry, Wisconsin was the first state to grant unionization of public employees. New York City had been doing it for a little while prior to Wisconsin. But in the late 1950s, the legislature said, you know what, we're going to let government employees unionize. And obviously that fight, for many people that remember it, it was literally, you know, weeks of people, gathering in Madison, Wisconsin, riots and property damage. And all they did was they restricted the union bargaining to wages. And basically everything else they said, you know, government officials, local government officials and state officials are going to have control over the terms and conditions of employment. And it's been a major difference for Wisconsin. I mean, they literally have saved, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars, because the union up there, the teachers union, for example, had control over the entire insurance system for teachers in the state. They had a for-profit subsidiary that basically didn't allow any school district to bid on anything or have any outside competition. Immediately upon breaking down that particular privilege for union officials, cities like Milwaukee started saving literally, you know, millions and millions and millions of dollars. And even the leftists up there, the regressive leftists who, you know, are kind of the foundation of a Madison, Wisconsin elite, they have basically embraced it, saying, you know, this wasn't all that bad. The one problem, Kerry, that they didn't wipe out bargaining completely. And so what you'll see is you'll see a political structure that will change, and they'll start adding things back in. And so what we recommended was they just repeal it outright and take a private entity out of the position to negotiate anything between taxpayers and elected officials. There's no place for them in that equation at all. Can workers join unions? Can public sector join unions? Absolutely. And you can go to the state capitol and you can redress your grievances and you can lobby and you can do all those things. But just like you and me, Kerry, we can't force anyone to listen to us. We can vote. We can redress, we can go, we can lobby, we can gather with others, and we can make our voices heard, but we have no special privileges to impose our will on taxpayers or citizens and voters. Unfortunately, union officials have gotten that in several states, and it's led to instances where California, Illinois, New York, if it weren't for the so-called COVID relief bill, the $1.9 trillion that Biden pushed out, these states that had the longest tenure of forced unionism and monopoly bargaining would be, if they already weren't, bankrupt. And yet they got bailed out through this COVID relief program. So they honored and rewarded these decades of mismanagement and this decades of union monopoly power that's taken some of these states right to the brink of insolvency.
Hey, you look at Illinois. the Illinois Supreme Court has ruled that they cannot reform their pension plan and that they just have to keep pumping more and more money into it and going closer and closer to bankruptcy. Really, all the federal government did was throw them a temporary lifeline. Eventually, they're going to have to pay the piper, and I'm sure the elected officials, Mark, are just hoping that they won't be in office, that they'll be collecting their taxpayer-funded pension fund.
Yeah. What was it that John Maynard Keynes said? He said, in the long run, we'll all be dead, right? So in the short run, it doesn't matter what you do. You can pump as much money into the system. You can do as much. You can spend as much and give away as much as you want, because by the time it really hits the fan, you'll be gone. And unfortunately, that may not be true anymore. I think the long term doesn't look very long anymore when it comes to the fiscal irresponsibility of some of these states, for sure.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. And it also brings to mind a quote attributed to Lady Margaret Thatcher. The problem with socialism is that eventually you run out of other people's money.
Indeed. And there's only one solution to that. And unfortunately, it looks like the American economy is on a crash course of kind of federal pumping and creating money. Gary, I don't know what the statistics said, but I think I read somewhere that the Fed has pumped more money into the economy over the last 12 months than they did in the last 50 years or something like that. The M1 is, you know, doubled or tripled or something like that. And that just can't be good. It can't be good. And I know my wife, my wife and I have been blessed with 6 children, and we shop at Costco and BJ's because they sell in bulk, you know, and she's amazed every time she comes home from the grocery store that, you know, I only bought 7 things, and how can it cost this much? Yeah. And, you know, here we are. And it's and part of that is the public policy, making promises to government employees that, you know, you can't keep, pension promises, increase in spending promises, being held hostage by a radical teachers union out in LA or Chicago that every time you ask them to go back to work, they threaten to strike. When you allow teacher union officials to basically consult, if you will, or instruct the Center for Disease Control about school reopenings, you have gotten to a point where the problem of union monopoly is part of the problem of the American economy. That's for sure.
Oh, yes. I couldn't have said it better myself. Well, I really appreciate you coming on, Mark. If we want to find out more about you, what you're doing there, can you just tell us where we find you?
Sure. We're on that amazing Al Gore internet at www.nrtw.org.
NRTW.org. NRTW.org. Great. The link to it in the show notes to this interview on financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Got a question for Mark? Send me an email to my personal address, kl@carrylutz.com, and we'll get it off to him. And while you're at the site, please sign up for our free newsletter. It really helps us a lot when you do that. Mark, been a pleasure. Thanks for clearing things up for us.
My pleasure, Carrie. Thanks for the opportunity to be on with you today.
Thanks for listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, your solution to today's trying times. For the latest, go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.